From the live music capital of the world, Austin, Texas. Good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM, broadcasting tonight from the studios of KLBJ Radio, AM 590. Why? Because tomorrow we have a huge talk fest in Austin, Texas. As a matter of fact, people from all over the area, from Texas and some other states, are all showing up. Thousands of people we're expecting, so I'm looking forward to it. In a couple hours, Austin's own Alex Jones joins us as we talk about the Illuminati and the push to putting all of us into a one-world government. But first, scientists say they have found the part of the brain that makes smoke addicted to nicotine. So the experts say that surgery on that part of the brain could help smokers quit. Would you do that? They say smokers lose the urge to smoke if the inch-long spot called the insula gets damaged. The discovery came after a 38-year-old man who smoked 40 cigarettes a day forgot the urge to smoke when that area of the brain was damaged after a stroke. Throughout 2006, a cattle farm in Tappan, North Dakota, experienced a series of very high strangeness events. A dead cow, for example, that coyotes would not touch. Why? Why is that so unusual? In a moment, an investigative report by our very own Linda Moulton Howe on Coast to Coast AM. Well, you know her, Linda Moulton Howe. She's an Emmy Award-winning television producer, investigative reporter, author. She goes straight to the men and women at the forefront of science and environmental challenges and to firsthand eyewitnesses of high strangeness. And high strangeness, once again, as she has an unbelievable story. Hey, Linda, how are you?
Hi, George.
Good to talk with you. I'm out here in Austin, Texas. You are in Albuquerque, no doubt.
Right, I am.
Well, tell us a little bit about this strange story, Linda.
Well, you know, it was a couple of months ago that the story first surfaced about a cattle farm in Tappan, North Dakota, that has experienced a series of very strange events over the past year. First, there was a dead cow that coyotes would not touch, and then 16-year-old teenager Evan Breeze was checking cows ready to calve and encountered a triangle-shaped craft near a dugout water pond. The craft emitted blue beams of light and took off rapidly after Evan's cattle dog ran toward it barking. That was nighttime, and at that time, the whole family, just went all over that area the next day, and they found an odd pattern cut into the dead cow's hide that had not been there before. And later, the father and other family members watched really strange aerial lights, in the sense that there were patterns, like grid-like patterns, being made over the farm on two different occasions in July and August of 2006. And then on September 11th, around 1 o'clock in the morning, Evan went to check the pig corral with his .22 because he had seen something moving. And he encountered non-human entities with sharp-bladed fingers dragging a dead sow. After Evan shot at one creature about 12 feet from him, Evan was grabbed from behind. He collapsed unconscious to the ground, and when he woke up, the Adidas t-shirt he was wearing had five slices in it. There were two faint scratches on his chest that did not bleed, and we're going to hear him tell the whole story himself in the second half hour. And just going through this list of all of the things that have happened, after that, a neighbor's buck sheep was found dead with one testicle cut neatly without blood from the scrotum sac. And finally, on December 5th, a buck boar on the Breeze farm simply disappeared, has never returned. Well, now, where has all this happened? About 60 miles straight east of Bismarck, North Dakota. It's the small farming community there called Tappan in Kidder County. And I got a USGS Terra Server satellite image from Tory Breeze, and it shows the farmland there. It looks like a child's game board because the crops are planted in circles to make the sprinkler irrigation easier. I don't know if that has anything to do with why it's a focus. But, George, you and our Coast listeners can see that satellite image, maps, drawings, and so many photographs related to this report, including Evan's strangely sliced T-shirt and some of his drawings of what he saw by going to my news website, which is www.earthfiles.com. And at the top of the headlines page is a hot link to a three-part Earth Files report about these mysterious events in Tappan. And I will be posting an Earth Files podcast, which includes some of Evan Breeze's hypnosis that he did to remember more details. Now, there have been many unusual animal deaths and disappearances in this region. Not far to the northeast is that Chase Lake National Wildlife Refuge that I reported on coast, where 29,000 American white pelicans disappeared in May of 2004. Then the next year, in 2005, 8,000 white pelican baby chicks mysteriously died. And then if you go south from Chase Lake, you come to Wrestler Waterfowl Protection Area. And for six straight years, between 1999 to 2004, thousands of gulls and cormorants mysteriously died at Wrestler Lake. Well, the farmers in Tappan, this is a town, a farm area with a current population of about 200, and they have also been challenged by mysterious deaths and disappearances of livestock. And the family we're going to focus on tonight is Myra and Tori Breeze, both in their late 40s. They have lived in Tappan all their life. Their five children are Tessa, 23, Trista, 20, Evan, 16, Tia, 11, and Marshall, 3. The Breeze farm has 1,200 acres and 100 head of cattle. That's the family's main source of income.
Yeah.
And for fun, 16-year-old Evan Breeze and his 11-year-old sister, Tia, raised six hogs in a corral not far from the house. A half mile beyond the pig corral, Tori Breeze found that cow in October of 2005 just over a small embankment at the edge of this dugout water pond that the coyotes would not touch. And Tori admits he did not examine the dead cow closely at the time, but he realized a few months later, on April 6, 2006, the coyotes and other predators had not touched the carcass, and they found the strange symbol on it. Here now is Tori Breeze.
They never ate on her. That is something that I just don't understand. In fact, I can tell you, up the gully from where that dead cow is, I had lost a big sucking calf, about a 900-pounder. I had some creep feed up there, and they overate, and one bloated. And the coyotes devoured that thing in about 5 days. It was gone. Just a little bit of hide and a couple bones. That's it. So that's the contrast. These two critters were that close together. That cow was never bothered, but this other calf was eaten within a matter of a few days.
The reason Tori Breeze paid attention to that long dead cow on April 6, 2006, was that something very strange entered the Breeze farm near the water pond on the other side of a small embankment about 30 feet from the dead cow. Afterward, as Tori and his family explored the land around the water pond, Tori found a large disc-shaped symbol etched on the dead cow's hide next to two triangular punctures. The disc was overlaid by six lines. The odd pattern had been created by cutting away the sun-bleached surface hair to expose the deeper, blacker part of the hair. But far more bizarre than the odd symbol and triangular punctures on the long dead cow is what 16-year-old Evan Breeze saw near the water pond at 12:30 a.m. on April 6, 2006. Evan had left the farmhouse around midnight to go check the cows that were ready to calve. With him was his cattle dog, Buster. The cows seemed fine, and Evan and Buster were heading back to the farmhouse when Evan saw a light flash that seemed to curve over a hill to the east of them. He started walking toward the pond and said he could see blue beams flashing repeatedly. As Evan reached the top of a hill, he was looking down on a wedge-shaped craft at the far end of the water pond, about 140 yards away. Shining from large ovals in the side of the object was blue light.
Just as I was reaching the top of the hill where there's an embankment down to the dugout, got to the top of it and I seen a UFO sitting by the dugout. Looked triangular shaped to me and had like oval shaped lights on it that were real pale blue, the beam was. And you know, they were real big from what I could see. And it looked like they could bend over hills. When they would shine over them embankments down there, it looked like they could bend right over them.
And it was as if they were looking for something?
Yep.
How big do you think this triangle was?
About 40 feet long, I suppose.
And how wide do you think the triangle was?
Probably about 20 feet.
It was about half as wide as it was long?
Yeah.
How high would it be from the ground up?
Probably 6-7 feet.
It was pretty narrow from the top to the bottom.
Yeah, it was real low profile, yeah. Then we just sat there and looked at it, probably 30 seconds, something like that. Even he was in shock, you know.
Even your dog was in shock.
Yeah. If it was something that he knew what it was, like he knows vehicles and all that stuff, so he would have ran up to it right away, you know, and tried to have been its buddy, but he even sat and looked at it with me.
Did he whine or shiver or anything?
Uh-uh. Because after that certain amount of time we looked at it, he shot down there after it.
As your dog starts running toward this triangular vehicle, what happened?
I just sat and watched it till finally I seen him kind of see off the glow that I could see him running down there, and then pretty soon he started barking and it took off. It was out of there.
And when it took off, did it make noise? What happened?
Completely silent. Not a sound.
That must have been eerie.
Yeah, it was strange.
As it took off, did it take off slowly first and then speed up, or what?
It just kept a certain speed until it went all the way up, and then I couldn't see it no more.
After it zipped away, what did you and Buster do?
We ran back home and came in and woke Mom and Dad up, told them what it was.
The craft that he seen sitting there was sitting between the banks on the east side, on the far side of the water. And that craft was sitting on the same side that the dead cow carcass is.
So whatever was in that triangular craft that sat down at the water hole might have made this calling card, so to speak, in the hide of an already dead cow.
Right. Could very well have. And you know, all my neighbors are cattlemen have looked at it. They couldn't determine when this had been put on the cow. I know it wasn't on the cow last fall. So it had to have gotten on after the hair fading of the hair, because it was a black Angus cow. Well, the reason the black hair is there is because whatever put this mark on there cut away the bleached hair. Whatever etched that on there, cut it on there, whatever word you want to use, done it a long time after this cow had died.
Where Evan thought the point of the triangular craft was, the Breeze family found a round indentation in the grass. Where the wider end of the triangular craft would have been, the family thought there also were two more indentations in the grass, but fainter. Their speculation is that the grass indentations were made by the weight of the craft on some kind of round landing pods. 4 months later, on July 20th, 2006, around 11 p.m., Tori was helping one of his neighbors whose car was being repaired. The two men were headed to pick up the car when they both saw a blue light in the night sky. The blue light was making an L-shaped pattern as if searching for something. Tori would stop the car to watch more carefully. At the same time, the blue light would stop instantly. When he moved the car, the light would move very rapidly. For more than a half hour, Tori repeatedly stopped and moved the car, and the light would react by stopping instantly and moving rapidly as well. Eventually, the blue light took off rapidly. Tori said that he wondered, could that blue light be the same craft that sat down near the waterhole in April? Then in August, about 2.5 miles northeast of the farmhouse, Tori was moving cattle out of his bull pasture. Myra and the kids were about a mile away. Tori was on his motorcycle that had a broken headlight, so there was no light on the ground. But suddenly in the sky, lights appeared that moved around in odd searching patterns for at least an hour.
I got to the crest of the hill and I looked southeast, and there in the gullies, I seen some real bright lights. They weren't a blue light, they weren't a green light, they were just a light. They were very bright, more like a car headlight or something like that. I stopped the bike and sat there and watched, and it was totally silent, but there was like tens of lights, not two lights or three lights, a bunch of them. And then I started the bike and came down so I could move the cattle into that gate. As I got down there by the gate with the bike, one of these lights came our direction. I started getting a little bit concerned because it started illuminating the pasture to the south of us like almost daylight. It illuminated acres, you know, like 30, 40 acres. Well, these things would
come at us. You know, they were a ways off. They were about 2 miles away. And then all of a sudden they would divide into like three. And they would go kind of, well, if you took an intersection sign and you drew a straight, one going down the middle and two branching off to the side. And then they'd go down into the gullies, and then you'd see one for a while, and then it would come up, and the other side would do the same. And they did this pattern over and over.
Whatever they were doing, that it was sort of like a searching operation?
Yes, it was looking like they were looking for something.
And Myra and Tessa and Evan, did they have any reaction themselves?
They were scared. But yet they were curious. They wanted to watch it.
Jeez, Linda.
Yep, and that just covers up through August, which was about 6 months ago. And little did this family that has lived it their entire life in Tappan, North Dakota, could they in their wildest imaginings have anticipated that only 2 or 3 weeks later, after this grid search pattern of lights, that Evan, the teenager, would wake up a little after 1 o'clock in the morning on September 11th and go down to the kitchen and just for a drink of water and look out the window. And when he looked out in the window with his good eyes, he saw something crossing the corral. And at Earth Files, you can see this image exactly taken from his point of view as you look out that window. And in the next half hour, what we're going to hear is perhaps one of the few absolutely face-to-face encounters with multiple non-human entities that he ran with his .22, thinking he was going after maybe coyotes or deer. And what he found at the corral has haunted him ever since.
Linda, what do you think of Evan?
Oh, I think that this whole family are the most wonderful, down-to-earth, straightforward, honest people that you could ever want to ever talk with, meet. Their intelligence is very keen, and there is a family photo posted at Earth Files of all of the family. And when you look at that, when you look at the photo and you match it up with these wonderful, sincere voices that have been so conscientious. I've been working with them now for almost 2 months to try to develop this story. And I am impressed with them genuinely. And Evan is a very conscientious, straightforward 16-year-old. He loved those animals. And when he got to that corral and he saw one of those sows dead, being dragged by what was clearly not human, he did what his instincts urged him to do. He jumped over that corral fence and he went after one. And you're going to hear it, the discussion.
Oh my God!
In his own words.
Was he in shock when he was doing this?
I think, having talked with Evan, he is such a conscientious, honest guy who feels deeply, and as you will hear him talk about these animals as his, as he called buddies, it would be like any of us who saw a pet that we loved or a child being attacked, and something overcomes you. And he went over into that corral with his .22, and he was there to try to protect that sow. And what unfolded is really kind of extraordinary, actually.
Okay, I'm looking forward to that in the second half. And then we're going to keep you for phone calls next hour, Linda, okay?
Yeah.
I had an opportunity last night to talk with Doreen Crane. You know her, the mother of Dan Burrish.
Right.
That story is still bizarre, I've got to tell you.
Yes. And images are beginning to surface on Chicago O'Hare, and I've got a story up at Earth Files, but I think for this first hour and into phone calls that this tap in North Dakota is so important because
yeah.
There aren't many face-to-face encounters with
non-humans. No, I know it. I'm looking forward to hearing this second half report. Stick with us. Linda Moulton Howe, earthfiles.com is her website, and I'll be right back. I'm George Norrie, and this, of course, is coasttocoastam.com. If you need to email me, that's always very simple. That's George at coasttocoastam.com. I want to thank all of you for picking up our book, Worker in the Light. You really are pushing it. I think it's $2.90 now on Amazon.com. That's worldwide. That's pretty good. What we're trying to do is just get out as many as the first printing as possible so we can get into the second printing. So Amazon does have Worker in the Light available right now for a substantial discount. It's also available at your local bookstores. I know tomorrow here in Austin, where I am at KLBJ right now, we're going to have a book signing right before the Talk Fest at the Convention Center. So those of you in the Austin area, you will be taken care of here as well. But those of you in other spots of the country, if you want to get it at a great discount, Worker in the Light is available at Amazon.com. I'll be back in a moment with Linda Moulton Howe on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie with Linda Moulton Howe. Her website, earthfiles.com, I'm sure is getting slammed right now by all of you. Hey, Linda, why don't you pick up with this just incredible story out of Tappan, North Dakota?
Well, thanks, George. We're now going to September 11th, 2006. It is about 1:20 a.m. according to the kitchen clock. This was a detail that came up under hypnosis with Evan Breeze later. Mm-hmm. And he had waked up, and he was went to the bathroom and down to the kitchen to get a drink of water from the kitchen sink. And there is a window over that sink that looks out to this big corral that's in front of their long barn. And you can see that photo. There's a series at Earth Files that shows you what it looked like from the kitchen, the corral that these entities are crossing, and then shows you the pig corral and the gate that he approached. Well, the moon was shining, and the yard lights were on, and Evan said that amid the shadows, he could see what he called a couple of things going across the corral. And his first thought was maybe coyotes or deer going after the feed at the pig corral next to the barn. So Evan got dressed, went to the equipment shed to get a gun, and headed for the corral with his .22, and here now is what happened.
All right.
Grabbed my .22 and walked up there, and I could hear the pigs, one of the pigs, riled up. And I started walking up there, and pretty soon it was just dead silence.
And what made you take the .22?
So I was going to go up there and shoot and scare out whatever it was.
What exactly were you seeing with your hog?
They were messing around with her.
What were they doing and what did they look like?
Fairly tall, dark, you know, from what I could see, because they were pretty much had shadows cast on them and real skinny looking and had these big hands on them. I couldn't see what their feet looked like.
Did you have a flashlight?
No. Well, we got a big yard light in our yard here. You know, it shines all the way pretty much around the yard and up in the corral a little ways. So I could kind of see them in a way. Because when I go up there to feed my pigs at night, I could kind of see them.
What did the hands look like?
Just long, with those claws on them.
What did the claws look like?
Like hooks.
Like curved hooks or long blades?
Kind of like combination of both, really. Like hooks and combined in a blade. Whatever they were made for, they were made to really do some tearing, you know. Or cutting.
Can you now remember anything you specifically saw these entities doing with your pig?
I think she was dead at the moment. I didn't see when they killed her. Just seen when they were kind of moving her around.
Were they moving her around with a piece of equipment or dragging her or what?
They were obviously using them claws in their hands. I think they were hooking her and kind of pulling her. And I walked up to the gate. I don't know what drove me to do it, but I jumped in there right away and shot one of them. Yeah, kind of hopped around and made this funny noise and just a weird screech.
Was it high-pitched, low-pitched?
It was fairly high-pitched, but not extremely high-pitched. It was a mixture between high-pitched and low-pitched. It was just a strange sound.
And was it like a scream or something else?
Like kind of a holler, kind of, but a kind of a high-pitched holler.
Mm-hmm.
Like not like us humans holler when we get hurt. It was strange.
What happened before you shot? Did you have eye contact? Did they look at you? What happened?
After I shot, they looked at me.
Okay, so you're standing how far from them?
Probably 10, 15 feet from the closest one.
Were their backs to you?
Well, there was one bent over the pig kind of screwing around with her, and then there was another one that came up and was kind of helping him. The one that came up had his shoulder towards me. The one that was fiddling around with her first had his back towards me.
Which one did you shoot?
I shot the one that was standing closest to the fence, which would be the one who had his shoulder to me. Because when I walked in there, they both kind of got startled, knew I was there, and I shot the one from the side. I know I hit him because he made that noise.
What happened next to that being? What did he do?
Walked around, kind of hopped around, because he was obviously in pain.
Did the other one with the pig try to do anything?
No, but they both looked at me, the other two. There was two more standing there. They looked at me.
Where were they?
They were fairly close to me.
So there were at least four that you could see in front of you?
I think so. You know, I can just kind of remember just bits and pieces. I can't even remember the whole thing.
Were they all the same height?
From what I remember, it didn't look like it.
What do you remember in terms of the heights?
I can just remember tall, probably close to 6'9".
It sounds, though, that one was maybe about 7 feet tall, and the others you think might have been shorter?
I think so, yeah.
Did you have any impression that the tall entity or the others had on anything that we would call clothing?
It was shiny, from what I can vaguely remember.
Shiny. On the one dragging the pig, or both of those two, or what?
On the one that I seen that I can just vaguely remember, and I don't remember which one it was.
The surface seemed to be shining.
Yeah, kind of, yeah.
And so the issue would be if it had on some kind of armor that was shiny, or if that was the nature of whatever they were.
Or whatever they were wearing, yeah.
Is the number 5 from the hypnosis session relate to whatever came up behind you?
I would think so, yeah.
Do you remember temperature, smell, anything from behind or around you?
It was felt hot. I think I can remember I was sweating. Because I was getting so riled up.
Do you remember pressure on you anywhere from whatever came up behind you?
Over my shoulder and on my front.
As if somebody or something put their arm around and grabbed a hold of your chest?
Yeah.
Do you remember anything in your head, like a thought or anything?
No, I don't.
Anything weird to your body before you went unconscious?
I don't remember feeling anything.
What is your very next memory?
Just running back to my sister and her fiance's house and a headache.
Your dad said it was a pretty bad headache?
From what I can remember, it was a pretty brutal headache.
He said you described it felt like your brain was now bigger than your skull?
Yeah, I think I said 2 sizes too big for my skull or something like that.
A lot of pressure against your skull.
Just completely hurt.
What are the events that happened after that?
They called my dad and came over here and we called the sheriff, and the sheriff came out and looked, had a look around and told us he'd come back in the morning.
Did he look for tracks, destruction of anything in the corral?
He didn't want to go in the trees to check anything out, in the trees that were behind the fence.
The sheriff was a little upset himself, huh?
Yeah, he was a little afraid, I'm sure, yeah.
Now, what about the corral? I think your dad said that there were some aluminum panels that were missing.
Knocked down, yeah.
Have any idea how that happened?
Nope. I think it was them, though.
These creatures?
Yeah.
But you didn't see them doing anything to the corral when you were going in there?
Uh-uh.
So whatever happened, it might have happened after or before?
Yeah, possibly, yeah.
Any sound besides the sound that being made when you shot it with the .22?
No, because I don't think they were tapping into my head.
And the pig was definitely dead on the ground?
Oh, definitely. If she was alive, they wouldn't have let her touch her like that.
How old was that pig?
I think she was 2.
Was she yours or your sister's?
She was my little sister's.
Anything about the pig that these entities killed that was a different breed, a different bloodline, anything special about it?
The only thing different about her compared to the other ones is that she wasn't as feisty. She was a very docile pig. She didn't really fight. She never gave me any trouble. I mean, even when I'd be chasing her, she wouldn't get hostile with me or nothing. She was a real docile pig. It wouldn't be very hard to take advantage of her to kill her.
What happened to your sweatshirt?
I think it grabbed me by my T-shirt because I had a pretty baggy T-shirt on.
This would be the entity that grabbed you from behind?
I think, yeah.
And what does the T-shirt look like?
It was that black Adidas one.
And what does it look like today?
Something grabbed my T-shirt and swung me down.
How many tears? What happened?
I think there was probably about 5 tears in it, like fingers. They were all placed just like a big hand. Thumb on top, obviously, because whatever was grabbed from the back. Rest of the fingers towards the bottom.
And so the print of one of these hands actually tore the front of your T-shirt.
Yeah, because they had them hooks on their fingers.
Did you have any scratches on your chest?
Actually, I had just a little one on my chest. Just a very small one, which surprised me because you'd think I'd have had more than that, you know?
Right. How could those curved, blade-like ends of those hands on the creature grab you at your chest, cause 5 cuts in your T-shirt, and not hurt you at all?
I just had one on the top where it must have been the thumb that grabbed me, and that was about it.
Is that scarred or still there?
It healed up already.
So most likely you were just allowed to collapse there onto the ground and they left.
They obviously didn't really want me or something, because they left me there.
When you became conscious, was the first thing in your mind to look for the creatures in your pig?
First thing was to get out of there.
Did you know then that your dead pig was gone?
I didn't know right away, no. Not until it went up there and looked. But I kind of figured so after a while because they were screwing around with it.
So it went from your seeing, shooting, the sound, the arm around you, going unconscious, waking up, going to your sisters, and returning eventually later with your family?
Yeah.
And that's when everybody discovered that the sow was missing?
Yeah.
And it's never turned up?
Nope.
When you think about all of this and these really strange, thin creatures that aren't human, what do you wonder about?
I don't have an explanation.
Do you assume, though, that they're from someplace in outer space?
I don't know exactly where they're from. I know it definitely wasn't people, but I don't know where they're from, you know?
When you think about what upsets you the most, what part upsets you the most?
That they were here, and what did they put that pig through? The fact that I couldn't save that pig and I couldn't get any of them.
I can understand that feeling. They were pets for you and your sisters.
Well, they were just like a cat or a dog, just as smart and just as close. I'd go up there and feed them twice a day and scratch them all the time. And, you know, pigs are not stupid. They're smart. They're supposed to be smarter than dogs, you know. Yeah, they were just like pets. They were my best buddies.
And, George, the story doesn't end there.
Hey, Linda, that guy sounds like he's telling the truth.
Oh, he is.
I mean, you can tell with the conviction in his voice, he's low key, but I mean, he just doesn't sound like a guy pulling the wool over anybody.
No, and the shirt is there as physical evidence, and there is this wonderful honesty and conscientiousness in him and his family. They were affected by something that came that is not human. They didn't ask for it. He had no idea. Evan had no idea what he was going to encounter when he hit that corral. And for people to question, there would be nothing in it for any family anywhere on the planet to make up a story. There is nothing about it that is in the fiction category. This is a real event that has happened, and when you realize that for almost 28 years now, I've been investigating the animal mutilation phenomenon in which people have described seeing gray entities in pastures where mutilated animals were found, and that here you have a small farm in North Dakota in which the teenage son encounters non-human creatures that when you look at the drawings are very similar to what other people have drawn over the years. They just seem to come in different sizes. And that there, somebody as credible as Lieutenant Colonel Philip J. Corso testified before he died that he had seen documents in Washington. You and I have discussed this before on Coast that were dated as early as 1951, talking about extraterrestrial biological entities being the ones responsible for worldwide animal mutilations.
Is this one of the first times you have ever talked to an eyewitness who has witnessed this kind of situation and has talked about entities, creatures?
This is the closest up close that I think that I know. People have seen entities further away and in corrals, but here, Evan, he ran, he saw his, as he said, his buddy, his pet pig being dragged, and he didn't know what they were, and he jumped over that corral with great courage and shot at one. And I think, though, that there is something that's important to stress, and it came up in the hypnosis session. And that is, when he was under hypnosis, there is a segment, the audio quality was so low that it wouldn't be workable on the radio. I do have this excerpt at my Earth Files podcast that will be up tonight. But I'm just going to recount something here and then make this point. He is going on saying that the entities are all staring at me in fear. They are scared of me. This is Evan. And the hypnotist, Craig Lang, from Minnesota, a professional hypnotherapist, said, "Where are you right now?" And Evan says, "Standing in front of them, looking at them. They are kind of telling me that they don't want anything to do with me." And the hypnotist asks him to move on further, and he sees this one limping that he shot, and says that the entity is holding its side. And the hypnotherapist asks, "What else does he notice?" And Evan says, "The other ones are standing looking at me in fear still." Now, there's four in front of him. Two are dragging the dead sow, and there are two others standing there apparently to do something. Yeah. So now there are four, and they are staring back because they are not here to fight with me. And the hypnotherapist asks, "What language are they speaking?" And Evan says, "They're not speaking. Body language, kind of. They are kind of bowing." And when the hypnotherapist said, "Well, what voices are you hearing?" He says, "Well, they don't really have a voice. They are just kind of bowing at me, kind of kneeling," unquote. Now, when I heard Evan in this hypnosis say that the non-human entities bowed and kneeled, I thought of another hypnosis session back in July of 1984. I was investigating a human abduction case that occurred the week before Thanksgiving of 1980, and it was a husband and wife had been driving north of Denver, Colorado, when suddenly a blue light, another blue light, surrounded them in their car, and they lost about an hour of time. Well, in separate hypnosis sessions, social scientist, hypnotherapist, UFO researcher, wonderful person, Richard Sigismund, he did hypnosis with both of them, and each told what happened aboard an egg-shaped craft in which there was one tall, rather handsome-looking being in what they described as a sparkling blue garment. Evan talks about shininess, maybe metallic. They talked about a sparkling blue. And there was at least one other shorter gray entity that neither the husband or the wife liked. And the wife also saw many red hooded smaller figures. And she had a vaginal and breast exam by what she described as metal-like tentacles. And she was furious. She was screaming obscenities during the hypnosis session at the non-humans. And then later, in a discussion after hypnosis, the wife said that the tall being, and this is a quote, "perceived my anger and said, 'We didn't mean to hurt you,' and something about this was for a good purpose. And I said, 'Nobody asked me,' and something about means don't necessarily justify the end. And the tall being said, 'Perhaps.'" And then she thought the tall being took her into a room where, and this is a quote, "These people all have their heads bowed at me, and I'm thinking, he's trying to make me feel good, and I'm not necessarily going to buy it." And the idea is in all of this that after all of these years that I have spent out in pastures collecting tissue and fluid and soil and trying to get investigations, I have never heard of a case in which a human being was ever hurt, even if animals were being mutilated. And there is something about this body language of bowing and kneeling, saying, "We're not here to hurt you. We just
want
this pig." Must
be some kind of universal type of posture. Stick with us, Linda Moulton Howe. We'll talk about the Chicago UFO story. We'll talk about the mother of Dan Barish and Dan Barish's case. And then we'll take your phone calls with Linda Moulton Howe next hour as well. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM.